voter ID in North Dakota. And this is something that wasn't really on the radar until about 2013 originally. And here, let me get this out of the way. It's because Heidi Heitkamp won in 2012 and the legislature wanted to go and not let that sort of thing happen again. You can respond to me at 35270 if you think that's off, but it's not. I was there. And now here we are making changes as late as pretty much yesterday when a judge is dismissing some action. So where is everything sitting right now, Dan?
So it's a little complicated, but I'm going to do my best to try to distill it. You're right that about 2013, the state legislature started making voting harder for people. And each legislative session, they kind of did different things. Mm-hmm. And it culminated with a challenge in 2018 by a group of Native American people who said that the new law was making it harder for them to vote than everybody else in North Dakota.
Well, and the reasoning being because with the voter ID, because people say, and I can already hear the messages being typed in on their cell phones, of what would be the issue of having to require an ID? You get it for cigarettes, you get it for alcohol, you have to prove your ID. This thing that sets it differently when it comes to voting and what North Dakota's legislature wanted to do was the requirement of a physical address. You couldn't use a P.O. box, and that is troublesome on some of our Native American lands. So I assume that was the case brought forward because it is more difficult to prove on a reservation that might not have a street address.
That's exactly right.
So there we are. And we've got the lawsuit. I know Spirit Lake, I think, was one, Standing Rock as well. There's some individuals. And the lawsuit came, and now this is where I need your help.
Sure. So there's kind of two parts to this lawsuit. Back in 2018, these plaintiffs tried to stop the law from going into effect because they said it was going to make it really hard, if not impossible, for lots of Native American people to vote. Mm-hmm. Now, it went through a series of challenges, but eventually the Eighth Circuit, which is the Court of Appeals, allowed this lawsuit, allowed the law to go into effect, but it didn't stop the challenge to happen.
Okay.
And so yesterday's ruling is now actually about the challenge itself. And the state of North Dakota tried to throw the lawsuit out, and Judge Hovland in Bismarck didn't allow that. So the lawsuit is still going forward, challenging whether or not this address component is legal.
So let's say this, so the lawsuit's going forward. Where does it rest now then if it's the district court, Bismarck, Judge Hovland say, no, it can go forward. Where is it? What does it mean if the decision's made then?
So the next step will be for the tribes and the individuals to gather evidence to try to convince either the judge or a jury at some point that these laws make it more difficult for Native Americans to vote than their non-Native American counterparts.
And then, so if they prove in fact that it has been more difficult, which I want to get into exactly the 2018 turnout, because there was a big effort to make sure to get Native American populations out to vote. So people will say, I think turnout was higher. So was it actually a detriment? But let's say that they are able to prove it in the courts that, yep, it was more difficult. Does the judge basically get then to decide, well, the state's got to change this or that? Do they throw the whole thing out? What are the options that come after that?
I don't think the judge has the ability to pick and choose the parts that he likes. I could be wrong about that, so okay. I want to put that out there. But sure. Usually they just throw it out and tell the state to go back to the drawing board.
Okay.
But I will say what you just mentioned. One thing that did happen is the state made that very argument that since voting was up in 2018, then this law couldn't have been discriminatory. And the judge specifically rejected that ruling.
See, and that's interesting because I know there was, like I said, a coordinated effort. And I think it was actually by the Heitkamp campaign to try to get individuals out to the polls and to vote. And I'm not sure exactly what they had to do to get it to where they had a valid ID or if it was about the new process. Well, all right, we'll set this aside. And if you could come back and prove with whatever, A, B, and C, I don't know if you have an answer of how they were able to get that voting turnout up and have it counted and then still have this going forward here.
Well, I know that the Heitkamp campaign did a lot of work on it, but also the Standing Rock tribe did. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what they said in the lawsuit, is it came to great cost to buy them. They had to spend a lot of money to print new IDs or to help people get new confirmations of addresses to come back and bring new documents in. And they said, if we have to do this every election, not only is it going to be very expensive, some people might stop wanting to do it. They might just give up on the process. And so they just said, this is not a solution. Just because we did a good job in 2018 doesn't mean we should have to do that every single election.
Dan McCray, our guest, he's the advocacy director of the ACLU of North Dakota. A message comes in saying, in fact, that you're not allowed to accept a tribal ID if you're serving at a bar. So, I mean, if you can't allow it that way, and it's just as interesting. It shows the variables here in which you have a sovereign nation trying to participate that should be duly allowed to participate in the voting process. Do you have time for a phone call before I get caught up with KFGO weather?
Absolutely.
Very good. Let's get to Michael. Michael, thanks for calling the program. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing great. Good to hear from you and Dane DeCray. I was just going to say, I remember, you know, well, the last few election cycles, our students went through the same situation, you know, with the they didn't have a permanent residency living at the dorms. But my theory on this is, you know, if they're going to be living in Fargo or throughout anywhere in North Dakota, they're going to be contributing to our economy for 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 years. They're going to be paying taxes, you know, and all you got to do is show residency for 30 days to register to vote. All you got to do is go up and show them that you're living at so-and-so for 30 days. But if they went up with their school ID, which I observed the last four election cycles, they weren't allowed to vote.
Yeah,
so what are your take on that? Yeah. Hey, Dane, how you doing, Dane DeCray?
Yeah, you want to respond to Mike before I let him go?
I'm doing well, Mike.
Mike, appreciate it. I'll let you listen off air here, because you are right about the student ID, and there was an argument that was trying to be made there, and I know I got to get caught up with KFGO News, so I'll be very brief here with KFGO weather, was, look, when I came to college here at NDSU, I've lived in Fargo now for about 15 years. My first 6 years that I was going to college, 5 years, whatever it was, I lived in a different residency every time. But back then, as Mike was saying, I just had to show proof of, look, here's my utility bill to prove I live here. They changed that now.
They changed that, but I still would say the reason it's more affecting Native Americans is back to the address part. So college students have an easier ability to live at addresses in our big cities, whereas addresses on reservations are much more difficult to prove and show. And so while it does affect them, it still affects Native Americans more disproportionately.
Stick around. I got some more things because, you know, I think about, as Michael just said, like you have to establish residency in 30 days. There are lawmakers that will move to a district 30 days prior just so they can run on the ballot there. And it seems like it's easier for them to do that, to ask for your vote, than it is for people that should go out and turn out and vote. 237-594. You can text me 35270. Let's get you a weather update. Be listening tomorrow. Sounds like it's going to be a turnaround from what we got going today. More with Dane DeCray next year on KFGO.
Back to Afternoons Live, News Radio KFGO.
I really want Head East to play, but I've only got about 4 minutes left with Dane DeCray. He's the advocacy director for the ACLU of North Dakota, a frequent guest of the show, friend of the show, actually. So, Dane, we're talking about the judges dismissing the stoppage, however you want to put it, the fact that there's a lawsuit going forward, as allowed now by Judge Hovland out in Bismarck, about this voter ID law. There was something that caught my attention when it comes to this administration with Governor Burgum. Explain what they were attempting just like, what, last week? There's been so many new items about what's going on with voting that I kind of lose track. But what did the Burgum administration try to do?
Yeah, last week they came forward with two proposals, I think, to try to make it easier to vote on reservations, which...
Yeah, hey, applaud them for that.
That's right. One of them was something to deal with this address verification. Before, it was on the individual to go get a bill, go get the address, to come back and prove that they actually have that address. Mm-hmm. And what they did now is they are allowing... the tribe themselves, instead of forcing their citizens to go make that proof, to verify themselves and to count the ballot.
Isn't that exactly what we were doing before this law change? You could have somebody vouch for you if they recognize you. I'm from Leeds, North Dakota. You got 450 people there. If I come in and vote and I forgot that I moved. I haven't changed my ID. But that person can vouch that, yes, I'm a resident. And that's what we're allowing now, or that's what the administration. Going back to essentially what we're doing before the law change.
That's what it sure seems like. And it'll be seen to see exactly what happens. But it does say the tribe and a local election board. And so the skeptic in me wants to know who has the most power when you make those decisions, the tribe or whatever the local election board turns out to be.
Okay. But I want to take a step back because I'm going to be critical of why we're even here. If there's one thing I can give kudos to and really a lot of credit is how Doug Burgum, governor, has really approached the state-tribal relations in his, now going on 4 years, whether it was actually getting to the table when it comes to the protests, the pipeline, DAPL, and now this, if it's in good faith, which I have no reason to doubt it is, you got to give credit where it's due there. With all that said, this lawsuit is still going forward, and there's still a lot of question marks, and we're in an election year.
I agree, and the only other thing I'd point out is it seems a little bit like the state is kind of talking out both sides of its mouth, because Governor Burgum, to his credit, is doing these things, and it seems like he's understanding this was a problem and trying to fix it. But if you look at the lawsuit, the state is arguing that this should not be changed, that these people should lose. So on the one hand, it's not working, so we should fix it, Doug Burgum says. But on the other, you should dismiss this lawsuit because there's nothing going on with this when it comes to the state of North Dakota's lawyers. So it's just a bit curious which one is which.